Yeah, so I'll have to double check with that. We wouldn't want to miss the festivities. And then, so future meeting agenda items that I have, we'll hopefully be getting an MPS discussion or introduction from MPS people that will give us an idea about specifications that they're going to put into their requirements, or requirements that they're going to put into their documents. And maybe give us some firm specifications or some envelope type specifications, so we could start thinking about evaluating different architectures and deciding where we can help. Hopefully we'll be able to find someone to give us an introduction or a talk on the timing system. People from controls. Paul's here. Paul's not going to do that. So we'll have to convince. Did anyone here go to the modernization meeting, the introduction this week?
Yeah.
You went there? Did they talk about specifying timing systems at that meeting?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll have to. Epix was the big topic. So
there was a meeting held to discuss the next generation of the T-Block.
Yeah?
And Greg Vogel went to that.
Okay.
So he's really the subject matter expert on, it's not at the system level.
This time of day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we can get an earlier time. We'll arrange something that's...
Or, conversely, if it's easy,
so when you met last time, what was the context or the scope?
It was to discuss the next...
Okay.
You can buy, Phil brought some by, I think they had running in the gigahertz range, not the 10 gigahertz, but the technology is there today. It's not flying in the sky, but it's still not terribly cheap. But we're figuring that 5 years from now, kind of give the talk now. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
It'll be, we kind of combine all the features of all the NC clocks, the T clock, MCAT, and the RC, but I'll let Greg know.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be good to start thinking about. And then we'll, there's lots of things to think about. So hopefully we'll schedule something in that regard in the future. So MPS and timing systems. I was passing by the loft meeting room the other day, and Philip was there with the representatives from Aero Electronics, and we talked about our. You talked to them about more daughter board FPGA memory boards. And you mentioned possible, you were talking at the end there, when I showed up, you were talking about possible training?
Yeah, on these transceivers, and other newer tools, but they have a lot of online training that you can also come to the site and do classes.
Okay. I think we get to a point where we want to start thinking about the hardware tools and disseminating and people going up learning curves. They're not so far away from working on something. You know, you don't want to train them and then they have to wait a year or two before they actually get their hands on something. But when we start seeing the hardware come in that people can use, maybe we can get some folks trained so they can be folks that can do these things. Right. But I want to bring in Reflex, CES, and possibly Aero Electronics representatives to talk about the things that they can do, the things the vendors can do, the things the vendors could make, possibly custom. But it would be nice for us to have more specifications so we know what quantities of things that we would want quotes for. And then just further focus on sources of requirements. And we'll see if there's time left at the end after John talks. I'll try to outline some more about looking for requirements. I think that's what's it say. Yeah, so I'll get out of the way here and let John talk.
All right. So we've thrown around ideas for data acquisition platforms for instrumentation, the next step beyond VME, for several years now. The theme has always been the same, keeping inside of some type of a crate, whether it be VXS or micro TCA, ATCA, all these different options that are out there. Recently, we've been looking at fiber links for the U2E slowed extraction regulator, and so Peter and I discussed an idea that we had for an FPGA based with data acquisition host board with several different data acquisition modules. So we'll get into that, and then I went out and reviewed some papers of what other labs are doing as far as their distributed data acquisition platforms, and it seems like there's been some progress in the last 5 years away from VME. Everyone's kind of doing a different flavor of a 10 gigabit Ethernet or a PCI Express type solution, and so I'll, at the end, after I kind of give our ideas, then we'll talk about what the other labs are doing. So, okay, this slide I took from the controls modernization workshop that Dennis hosted a couple months ago now. And that presentation that I gave, I kind of outlined what instrumentation needed as far as a new from the control system, what we were kind of our wish list of things were going to be. And I think one of our biggest requirements is that the solution needs to scale well. For instrumentation, we have systems that have single input channels, DCCTs, for example. We have some systems that have a couple of input channels, and we have systems that have dozens and systems that have hundreds. So it's our wish to have a single platform that could fit all of those situations, and then the cost and complexity would just scale. But that is kind of hard to do, and so in the next couple of slides I'll kind of propose my solution, which was to have two different lanes. Some other things that we're looking for, of course, is high speed transfers. We can't really get away with the VME 20 megabit or 20 megabytes per second anymore. And even though our demands from users right now are rather moderate, just maybe a couple turns of data or a single pass turn beam, we are starting to hear from people who want to have all the data that we can provide. And that's not such an unreasonable request, given the kind of the data transfer technology that's out there now, so we can understand why people are asking for it. We also need faster CPU processing, because the more data that we acquire, the more positions we need to calculate, and that's a very CPU-intensive operation. So we need to take advantage of modern CPUs, and it'd be nice if a solution out there existed that, you know, we can plug in a quad-core i7 or i9, you know, modern CPUs that are available on the marketplace. And one of the last components is we need high-speed deterministic data links between our nodes, specifically for MPS, which is kind of in the theme of these meetings. So talk about, you know, what we can achieve as far as that as well.
John, good question.
Go ahead.
So for your high-performance computing needs,
yeah,
why wouldn't you consider pushing some of that down into the FPGA?
You can certainly do that. And you got to, you know, trade off what can be done in the FPGA and, you know, what needs to be done in the CPU. Certainly, you want things that are more offline in nature, you want to handle on the CPU, because the FPGA is going to be busy acquiring data, right?
Right.
So that's the type of thing I'm getting at. Okay. So, okay, I already hinted at it. So we have a couple of, I wrote down three different use cases that instrumentation has that I think highlights the modularity or the scalability needs that we would need from a data acquisition platform. The first one I put down is the idea of our intensity monitors. These are toroids, DCCTs, which the ones that we have out in the field now are, you know, they have a single input channel, and on the front, we usually front end them with one or two devices per front end. So that would be a VME crate with a processor in it and a data acquisition card and some timing modules. And because the devices are dispersed amongst the machine, that, you know, that is typically how we've achieved that. I put down here that these have complex state machines, because the way that the where the operators want to see the data is kind of has a complex set of rules. All of those rules we've implemented inside of the processor and the software with the help of the timing module. So the timing module is a necessity here, because we need to synchronize with the clock system for the machine. And not only that, but the intensity monitors are also one of the biggest suppliers of data to the machine, to other nodes in the machine through MDAP and such. So that's another thing where they participate. Another use case is a transfer line BPM system. Now these are these have a more complicated data acquisition requirements than the intensity monitors. It's, you know, your typical horizontal BPM or horizontal and vertical BPM pair would require four channels of ADCs. And transfer lines typically have a few BPMs, you know, up to a dozen per machine. So these crates typically look like one processor and then one or two DAC modules to, and then depending on the length of the, you know, I think the switchyard BPM system has four or five nodes. Well, the boost, the mini boon guy has two. So these aren't they're not very dense as far as dense crates, but they are multiple crates. And then the last use case would be the synchrotron BPM system. So this is, you know, the main injector, recycler, booster. All of these have half a dozen nodes. Each node has, or each VME crate stuff full of as many data acquisition modules as we can put in. You know, I think the least we have in a booster crate is three. Most of the recycler crates have 10. We even have the use case of the IOTA BPM, which I think is our most dense, has 11 or 12 data acquisition modules in it. So these would host close to 20-30 BPMs per crate. And then they have a more complicated state machine than the transfer lines. The transfer lines is kind of like ready for beam, wait for trigger. These, in a case of a main injector or recycler, we want to take, we want to take turn-by-turn positions on each injection, or we want to do a closed orbit at certain different times in the cycle. So all that needs to be coordinated with the machine clock, and so that puts extra demands on the, what type of timing hardware we put in there, and then what the responsibilities of the software are. So then the idea here for the simpler approach is more of a pizza box type solution, because for a toroid or DCCT, we only have one or two channels of input, and we've seen these FPGA and hardcore processor combinations, these boards out there. You can put your you can lay out a custom board with your ADCs. You get an FPGA and an ARM on the same silicon, and they communicate through a high-speed memory bus, and it makes the everything's pretty simple, because you have one piece of silicon, and you can talk between it. No bus, no serial links or anything. It's all kind of on the same silicon. And then they talk Ethernet to the control system. This has been used in, and so similar to kind of what Philip was talking about last week, and what's been used and what Kevin's used in the LINAC modulators. We have instances of this out here, and so even though we haven't done this yet in instrumentation, it's certainly something that we could do. We can take our 125 or 250 megahertz digitizer boards and put an FPGA on there with one of these ARM cores, and then we can run Linux in the ARM and talk on the control system, deliver our data up to it. Go ahead.
One question about that platform. This is already being used.
Yeah.
So how much overhead is that to support your controls code between that core?
So it's the same amount of upkeep that we're putting into our Linux platform on the BME processors. Kevin's done a lot of work to.
So it's similar. So you're essentially building your own kernels and everything.
That's right.
And that's all. So for these, if you got different ones, can it be made into a common thing then?
Oh, yeah.
Or each particular.
No, there's no reason why, eSupport would have their own flavor of this. Instrumentation would have their own flavor.
So this somehow that could be standardized at the controls level into support interface.
Yes.
It's going to be the ARM processor and the Cyclone, which I think they are using, the Cyclone SoC, and one real that.
The customization would all happen at the, how you talk to the FPGA is the only part that needs to change between application. We have pretty much the Linux on an ARM figured out, just as much as we have it figured out on the BME boards. Okay, so some pros of this this single board approach is that the number one is that the platform is really cheap, a couple hundred bucks, thousand maybe, for the boards, for the system on modules, and that gets you up and going. We're already doing this in eSupport and low level RF, so we have experience and know kind of what the effort looks like. Linux and ACNet are already in place for these, and it's a pretty attractive solution. Some of the drawbacks is, well, obviously it doesn't scale beyond a few channels. We can lay out a board with more ADCs on it, but there are limitations as far as, you know, real estate on the board itself. And there's a big question, well, what do we do about clock decoding? I think we looked at using this approach for the MUTA-E slow extraction regulator, and one of the big sticking points was how are we going to do T-clock decoding. So this is where we would kind of need to interface with controls and come up with some common IP that we could apply to the, because we do have the FPGA available to us, or we could use some type of external module, or there are these, I've heard now that Controls has their own network attached timing box. That solution is available. But those are something that, you know, we would have to work out amongst all of us to figure out. And then last question, more of a question, less of a con, is how do we link it into the MPS system? Certainly we can make decisions about, in a case of a toroid, we can make, oh, that's too much beam or not enough beam, and we can pull an MPS line. But how can we link up two systems on the opposite end of a beam line or at different parts in the accelerator complex to say, you know, if we put in this much beam but we only see this much out, then trip the MPS system. Certainly we could think of things that involve fiber links or whatnot, but those are again an issue that would need to be resolved in this type of platform.
John, can you talk a little bit more about the sharing the IP between controls and prompting for T-clock decoding?
Sure. So the challenge that we have with MUTA-E was we can have a board here, and we can do all of our data acquisition on it. We know how to do that. That's our job. But what about the timing mod? So now we need to synchronize the toroid readings with T-clock, or we need to publish the toroid reading on MDAT. If we're just using a single custom board, how can we expand it to, can we put a PMC UCD on it? Well, we'd have to put the PMC connectors on it and implement our own PCI bus. That would be something that, you know, we would have to do with controls to figure out. I think, you know, probably the easiest solution would be just bring in a T-clock line and hook it up into the FPGA, and we have some common IP that we could drop in there. That would be great. We just use that.
So I mean, are we at that point yet?
Where are we not at that point? We got it.
Everybody gets to stay, goes to Dan. I go to Dan. I ask him how you do this. He tells me, and you write a T-clock decoder. And then if we get a good T-clock decoder, you know, that everybody really likes, you can make kind of it the thing and pass around.
There's a whole bunch of them out there that exist. They're just not a standard that everybody goes and uses.
And then if we're talking about new clocks,
gigabit link clocks, yeah, then that's going to need some IP that goes and some hardware that goes on your board.
And so that's a consideration.
Translator, if we decide that we just need some fraction of everything that's put out on that line, then it could go to an interface that brings in something else, to something simpler to the boards. I don't know if that's a good idea.
And so then for our other use cases, we need to take a more distributed point of view, because Now we're talking about expanding beyond just one or two channels to a dozen channels or even hundreds of channels. Now we got to start talking about more exotic hardware. Well, not necessarily harder, exotic, but you know, more beefier hardware. So the idea that, you know, we've been kicking around here is take our DAC modules. Right now there are 6U VME cards. They acquire data 250 megahertz, down convert in an FPGA and store on their own onboard memory, and then they make that the data available, or their memory buffers available, over the VME bus. And
you're saying how it's done now?
I'm saying how it's done now. Right. So they make it available over the VME bus, or and optionally through, but we haven't done it yet, is a GigE out the front panel. This proposal would include take away the VME, and then replace the GigE port with a fiber SFP port, or a QSFP or a SFP, and connect it to a PCIe host adapter. So the this would sit inside of a big rack mount PC, and you can get some 1, 2, 3, 4 of these. They sell modules that have any number of optical ports on them, 2, 4, 6, 8. And the idea is on the host adapter, you have a nice big FPGA and a bank of memory. So the concept here is take the memory off of the DAC module, and as you're acquiring data, transmit it over the fiber links into the host adapter and write directly into the host adapter's memory and store it there until a request from the control system comes along. So you're buffering all of our position data locally on this host adapter, and then as you need to fulfill requests from the control system, we can go at this host adapter or over the PCIe bus, drain his memory, and do what we want with the data. Now, you know, right now that's just reading out big buffers of turn by turn, or, you know, smaller buffers of orbit data. But certainly with the availability of quad core multiprocessors, we can go at that data, slice and dice it any way we want offline.
I'm not sure if you get rid of the memory on the back module, just like if you want to write the raw data, I don't think somebody got to get it into the memory.
So
you
these links are.
Width bus.
I mean,
basically what we have now is like a, you know, kilobit wide bus with all the memory all the panels, and you know they're writing at several hundred megahertz TDR. I don't think you can shove all that into one pipeline.
I mean, these are, you know, 10 gigabit, 40 gigabit per second links.
It's right. The links might be fine, but you still got to get them in the memory.
Yeah.
And what we have right now is effectively a gigantic wide memory bus, because each module has its own 128-bit bus. Actually, two of them, so 256-bit bus.
Okay.
And so I don't think...
So we can still keep it on the DAC
modules.
Put two modules
together, and then all of a sudden you need a two kilobit bus.
Yeah. In place. So, alternately, we can keep the memory on the DAC modules,
yeah,
and
like
dump it into the, you know, do a high-speed readout onto the card.
This is only for diagnostics where you really want the full...
Yeah, the raw data available to you. Right. So, I mean, that's, you know, detail.
Yeah, this would be a mix. You know, we talked about just taking it right off the DAQ module out of Ethernet, if it's a single thing. And if you need to go a distance, or you want to concentrate data, like a data concentrator concept.
My other question is, what's the advantage of going to these fiber links instead of, say, PCI Express?
In a box.
So that it depends on what type of box you want to put this in, right? This is a PC above a crate of some sort.
Right.
And
I'm saying you got to have a link from your DAC modules,
yeah,
to this guy. What's the advantage of making that a fiber link instead of PCI Express?
So this hardware is out there, we're aware of. Now, I've looked for PCI Express hardware too. This is a lot more available than the external PCI Express.
So this, you got some sort of switch module or something, must be used to call the fibers into.
Yeah, well, the host adapter has 4 8 ports on it.
Fiber ports. This is just it's one almost PCI like card, I guess.
So you can get these optical ports, but you can't get a PCI Express.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
You can get PCI Express, an external PCI Express. I've seen those. They're just not as popular as these are.
That model allows you to move those DAC modules, distribute those.
Absolutely, yeah.
Closer, get rid of the cable,
and you can scan.
Yeah.
I think there's a length of cable limitation with PCI.
Yeah, I think there is. Whereas with the
PCI is on the host cap, which is going to be your PC.
Yeah, right. Nathan's asking about why did they.
PCIe in the processor. I was just wondering if you couldn't just go directly PCIe to your DAC.
Have you run into bandwidth limitations, right, into the memory? What kind of, you really pump a lot of data?
For over VME, are you saying, what we do now?
Like you said, getting that data into 8 gigabytes of memory.
Yeah, well, I assume the rate's got to be comparable, but at the end, this thing's funneling fiber, and then it's going to PCIe.
Yeah, it's no problem to get stuff over 10 gigabit links, but then what you do with it? How do you move?
Eventually, you're
controlled
by your memory.
Yeah, and then what do you do with it? It's got to come from memory to go somewhere.
Yeah, so then your processor attaches to this.
But then it goes out over
gig. Yeah, so that's the problem.
But you have the data.
But
that's
you have
being
a processor
requested.
Available there to do. You know, you want to slice and dice that data. You do not try that.
What you're doing for a particular system, whether it's chunking slices here for somebody to read that later, if it's cleaning stuff out. And I thought, we're just talking about architecture.
So
what are the VME crates do for you besides keeping your cards from falling on the
floor? They would need VME, right?
That's basically what it comes down to. Okay, what kind of crate does this go into?
The one thing I would like to point out about VME, I think we're glossing over here a little bit, but we've already run into this with the Linux stuff. And it was, I think, way more than any of us estimated. Is that with VME, we had a VxWorks processor and we had a kernels that were banged on and provided by controls, and we just used it. And now when you get into the business of making your own kernels, it's been a lot of work, I think.
I don't think we should be making our own, I think.
That's what I was trying to bring up. There's got to be a way to standardize this and not have a couple of people that are supporting these.
Well, in the past,
it's a big amount of work.
They still build kernels. They built VxWorks kernels.
So
that's going away, right? But we don't build Linux kernels for all the different.
So the nice thing about this architecture, though, is that this lives in a PC, in a rack mount PC, and you know, make it Intel. You run Scientific Linux on this.
Right.
You don't even have to go with our flavor of Linux. I mean,
that's what I was. I mean, with this, once you're sitting on a PC, I think it's very easy to standardize that and make a. That's why I didn't get a feel for, you know, is it exactly the same for the ARM cores or
no? So
I'm guessing those are going to require a lot more.
Those require a little more finessing of the software platform, but the cost is very attractive. You know,
I'm saying, you know, we've been spoiled. The VxWorks, those kernels have how many years behind them? 30 years, 40 years?
Not many. I haven't.
But what we've been used to using, there's been a lot of man hours that have gone into that.
Yeah. Well, part of this is not only, you know, buying new flashy hardware, but it's, you know, we need to dedicate resources
for this that we want to do, and not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you proposing?
I'm not saying we stay with VME by any means. I'm the first guy to say we got
to
do it.
Yeah, no, we need to dedicate resources to maintaining these platforms, the software as well as the hardware. Yeah.
So you seem to have something in mind for the DAC modules though here.
Yeah.
What?
So, my model here is the DAC module is basically like our 250 megahertz digitizer. It's a 6U VME card. He's got ADCs, an FPGA that can do down converting on it, and what, 512 megabytes of memory?
But it's something that's redesigned. It's not VME anymore.
That's right.
It's just so out there with a fiber connector.
Yeah.
So now it's just a fiber connected device. So it could be, in this case, you could make a crate of these devices, still, you know, hold them in a box or a crate to slide them into, so they could still be boards, or it could just be a pizza box type thing that goes in a rack for a toilet or something and just got one or two channels or whatever. It can become whatever you want. It just, you kind of have this move.
And then the front ending is done by a rack mount PC. And you put in this host card in there that has its own FPGA, the memory, and then all the optical links to the DAC modules.
And in that case, where we had to write, Linux drivers for VME, which gave us trouble, the PC to PCIe memory, that's done by the rest of the world. Right.
There's a lot of over. So the other thing I'd point out, guys, I'd say just look at, so I know it looks very attractive. You got your one little distributed guy with his own ARM core that could go off and talk to the world. But instead of you replace that with just one of these links and having talk to one of these little rack mount guys, look at what's the extra cost of that versus what you're going to pay in time developing the code to go in that little device.
So another thing that you could do with these is, you know, so yeah, Toroid or DCCT, you know, might have one or
this
two channels, but you
a
could
more cost and overhead. But I'm saying you could make a standard set of code that goes into this guy that anybody can use, and it might get out.
Yeah.
So my guess is it probably would.
So if you look at this model, you're talking about a link, like a 10 gig link on your rack mount PC, versus the other pizza box. If you have a DHQ module with its own, say, slower 1 gig Ethernet, that would have, and each one has a 1 gig Ethernet. I think at the end, in the end, you end up with more bandwidth if everybody's its individual little pizza box. Right? The bottleneck on this isn't the QSFP, it's the Ethernet that goes out to the world. And then, so you can shove as much data as you want into it, but if each one of those is a
distributed, the data that goes out, in the case of a BPM system, the data goes out to the rest of the world, is going to be a limited amount, because the control systems is not going to chew on 8 gigabytes of data.
This is the clearest solution for that many module system. The question is, do you still use this if you got just a one module system? Or do you make that one module system have its own set of...
I don't see why it's the clearest solution, because if you build a pizza box, you can have 8 gigs on each little module, and then you're always going to hit the network bandwidth.
It's a different bottleneck. I mean, for a different use case than BPM, you want more data coming out the top of that the control system than what you have for, and what you can take advantage of consolidating in the BPM case here.
I would look at it, take a critical look at where your bottlenecks are. It's a distributed model.
It's the Ethernet. You could say, okay, I make a whole bunch of Ethernet pipes, but they still got to go somewhere. So you run into you just push the bottleneck up the chain.
So the advantage here is
that you multiplied your computing power by n.
I don't think the computing power is the bottleneck. You got all the power you want in each of those modules.
Yeah, I mean, and you could. You know, you can always replace it with your latest rack mount PC. You know, keep going up to
but
whatever.
This is easily
you can
scalable and upgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, if just pretend that's a network switch where you put your rack mount PC, and you have n number of computing powers, n times it.
Are you talking about the memory storage, memory and computing down here?
Nowadays, these front ends, they're all
right. And you can still do that. There's nothing that's stopping you.
No, I'm considering. I wouldn't say one's better than the other right now, but
I think we presented two different architectures so far.
Yeah.
One where we go Ethernet directly from a single box, and one where we consolidate lots of data points in a big memory
that's attached to a fast processor. And then it goes Ethernet to be able to do different things with all these different data points, all these different.
So
an MPS, this could be an MPS. This could be more of an MPS than with a pizza box because, you know, it needs fiber data from all different places of the Linac. And then you could also do your machine learning and something like this.
Yeah,
you could do your waveform, your high, so your big pipe waveform thing and something like that. So there's a there's
this guy's your first level saver. I need information from all my different
everybody.
And I want to use that to do something.
It's similar.
You've got the optical links to pass that data to the next guy. And doing it, I think, is efficient.
So it's similar to the data collector, the data
concentrator
concept that the computing division uses for collecting data from detectors. Right, they have lots of different detection elements. They all bring them into one big memory where it can be accessed and decisions can be made for trigger levels and those sort of things. Anyway.
All right.
How many more slides you got?
Just a couple. So, okay, we already kind of talked about some of the pros and the cons. So, the pros I put down here, we can scale it as much as we'd like because these PCIe boards can get, you know, 2, 4, 8 fiber ports on them. Then we can always add extra host boards in one PC or add more PCs. And the advantage you get is from having a rack mount PC, of course, is that the CPU power can scale to whatever the commodity, whatever on the market at the time. You know, now we can buy, you know, the fastest processors that are available, not necessarily what Artisan or whoever our vendor stopped at. And then it's possible to dedicate one of those fiber channels to an MPS link. You know, which have to be a part of a larger discussion about how we integrate with a PIP2 MPS system. The host ports are expensive.
What's the host board mean here?
So that's the PCIe, the adapter.
Host VGA board.
Yeah.
Fiber link.
So it has all the fiber links on it and the memory.
Right.
Yeah. So Peter got a quote for a guy for the Neato-E slow extraction regulator. That was an XMC based board.
How many channels?
That's four channels. Yeah.
You can get them with 12.
What's
four
that?
Four QSFPs?
Yeah.
You can get them with 12.
That's 160 gigabits.
So I know we bought those Ethernet switches for the booster. I remember they're a couple hundred bucks. What is the, how many?
So what you're getting extra besides the switch, though, you're getting the ports, the memory, and the FPGA. So we'd have, what I'm putting down here is that we need to look at some of the lower end, what's in the lower performance tier.
So
you might get a cheaper.
The memory.
It's get you, it's got, you've got memory, and you got a big, you know, Xilinx Vertex 7 in there for, you know, if all you're doing is collecting data into memory, you might be able to get something at a cheaper and a lower performance tier.
And that's not that expensive. It's in line with the AMD processor cost.
Right.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You're using the A100.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, this is on the same, I was hoping we're going to do two.
Yeah.
So once you've done this, plus the, you know, the rack mount PC, it's all pretty cheap.
But that's one data point as far as what's on the market, you know.
We're trying to give up some performance, but to just say, you just
need
a gigabit switch. Gigabit into the switch figure.
And that's a possibility,
that's
too.
That's another option.
Okay.
I might not have the performance here, but it's got to be 10 times more cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need specification. And then really say what our application is for this Linac. You know, when we go to put this Linac together, it's going to have a finite size. We need to find out how big what that size is. And then we try to find economical, do the engineering and find the most economical architecture and equipment to do the job, I guess.
Yeah. And then there's the whole question of how, well, what do you put the DAC modules in? You know, we could recycle VME crates. CERN's using EuroCard crates. I mean, there's that. That's another decision that would need to be made. Okay, so I also did a survey of kind of what other labs were doing or what they're publishing papers about, at least. CERN was doing a similar approach based on optical links, but they were kind of concentrating their data acquisition modules in a Euro crate that used compact PCI on the back end. The DAISY and ESS had a couple papers out there about micro TCA solutions. That's another thing that, you know, we need to examine.
XFL was micro TCA.
Yeah.
And then big machines.
Right. And what really intrigued me was a couple of papers from LCLS2. They have an ATCA based solution, but their solution was interesting because of it was very modular. So what they did was they have an ATCA crate with processor, 10 gig Ethernet switch in it, an MPS board, kind of like how we've been discussing. And then they have this ATCA carrier board that has, which is kind of like I had a couple slides ago for the PCIe host adapter. It's got two sites for AMC boards, which are the ATCA kind of expansion module, and it's got 8 gigabytes of onboard memory and an FPGA. And what they do is they put their application-specific hardware on the AMC board. So you can have, like, you can take your carrier board, and then you have AMC modules for BPMs or for toroids or low-level RF or whatnot. Put this on the carrier board, plug it into the back plane times N, and they talk 10 gigabit Ethernet over the back plane. And so then they went out and they developed all these custom or all these common firmware and software building blocks, and that's what they, you know, applied to their LCLS2 data acquisition. So that sounded a lot like the approach that we're trying to take here. And so, you know, there's a model of someone who's done this one way, ATCA. But doesn't mean we have to adopt ATCA, but take the same methodology and apply it to, you know, a solution like that's based on fiber or micro TCA or what else is out there.
The history on that is kind of interesting because they started with micro TCA, and then the guy who took over the department came from the experiment side of the region, ATCA. And
I figured it was something like that.
Yeah, he pushed it through. It wasn't a very popular decision. And also, the low level RF was not
ATCA. Oh, I think the paper was specifically called that.
Well, they might have did it for, it's not for LCLS2, there was an upgrade to LCLS.
Oh, okay. But it was very interesting because of how they designed it to be modular. So, you know, they had all the
It's also pricey for, especially if you don't have a full crate.
Yeah.
Fill up a crate is okay if you've got one card in a crate.
Right.
Yeah. Any of these solutions have the same drawbacks that we've had with VME. There's the benefit, you've got everything kind of standardized. So it makes making your particular board for whatever you want. You know, a lot of the stuff's done for you fit into a box. So there's some benefit to that. But they all have big costs and they're restricted to whatever that system's been designed for. You've got to make sure stuff fits inside that box. And that where you run into a lot of limitations. Especially say you've got a system with a toroid. You got to either come up with a solution for this. Either, like right now, what we've done is we stick a VME crate out there with a processor and we stick one board in there, and that's your toroid. And this system would really make no sense. You've got to, probably what they've done here, what it sounds like, you have different boards in your crate that might have all kinds of different functionality. And they're all being served then out by the same master.
Yeah, it becomes a Franken crate.
That makes a lot more complication in the code, but you got to come up with something like that.
What you have to think about is that now, instead of saying
this crate belongs only to Mr. McTavish.
It's got to belong to a bunch of
us. It can belong to everybody.
Yeah.
And now you have a crate that can be used by different types of systems, provided that there's no backpoint there to share. So now it becomes a more general system.
It does, but you've also got multiple people with their fingers in the same crate.
Right. Right. So they all have their fingers in it. It's
doable. Right.
I think that's
the only way you can make this like cost comparable, because these systems are very expensive.
Well, that's why, you know, a single pizza box solution
for the
low end, or not necessarily the low end, but the single device, you know, use case.
The cost scales very well.
The cost is perfect. And, you know, where the cost is justified for a crate or an expensive fancy fiber card, you know, you got to be in this use case where you have dozens or hundreds of BPMs, which we have plenty of those use cases out there. But we also have the ones where, you know, you just have one or two channels. And yeah, why spend $20,000 to when there's a solution out there?
That's, when you talk about starting to pull the MPS system, where you might have like dedicated parts of the system and stuff like
yeah.
that.
So have you looked at a cost of like the idea of a rack mount PC versus a micro GCA? If you were to populate your rack mount PC with the PCIe fiber links versus a micro TCA.
I haven't gotten quotes on a micro TCA, but what I've heard is, you know, plan to spend $30,000-$40,000 for a crate.
For micro TCA, no, it's cheap.
No?
Yeah.
What do you think?
You're under $10,000 for including the processor card and the crate and some other ones.
And you still got to buy the
slots.
I mean, yeah.
That's
a common
cost. Okay.
I mean, you're going to have something in the slot.
One way or the other.
But, you know, the base platform of micro PCA is really pretty affordable.
What about the time getting it configured? What about complexity?
There's support for that a lot more than there was when we were looking at it. I mean, the Argonne brought up their micro PCA crate in a couple of days.
I remember it wants to turn into power supply.
Yeah, but I think those days are past us.
So I'd like to make a couple of comments. One, the cost analysis so far, at least for 52 instrumentation, is entirely dominated by people and development costs and software development costs. So the hardware is a component, but from our initial numbers and talking about over here, a lot of it is based on two things. Development of hardware, how much can we get from a vendor as opposed to developing ourselves, and software. Software costs are high. The M&S costs were about a quarter to a third of the total cost, most of it was development cost. PIP2 is 904 channels for beam instrumentation, not including laser wire, of which 60% of that is BPM, another 25% is BLM, and the rest is wire scanners and a handful of beam current devices. So it's going to be dominated by two main systems, at least in terms of number of channels. But you have both systems. You have the high density BPM, lots of channels, and you got the toroid down below and a few channels. But at least from the numbers we're talking about with different options, there is a difference, I think, in the hardware and what you're going to buy, but it's going to be mostly in development cost. And so we gave a value engineering talk this week, and it looked like the best way to save would be in terms of leveraging off industry, what can we buy as much, and minimizing the software development where we can. You know, we get, you're writing kernels, you're writing drivers, that's expensive and time consuming and difficult. So the only thing else I didn't hear mentioned here was long-term support. So, you know, we're going through that right now. Probably you got to change a board or something changes, you got to change a driver, you got to rewrite. Any feel for one of these technologies? I mean, that's usually a crystal ball that we can't guess, but some technology is going to last more than 5 years. In fact, these labs are going with micro GCA and APCA.
So the fiber boards are adopted pretty widespread outside of, you know, higher energy physics. I mean, they're used for high speed training, they're used for military, radar, you know. So that there's a market there. These are, you know, and not only are they used in, you know, infrastructure for telecom and whatnot, you know, those boards are out there. There seems to be a pretty big market for them.
I think what you're talking about, Rick, for all the different platform solutions that we talked about, doesn't change. We still have a custom board at the end which we're writing the firmware for, and we've still got some software for our own front end that we're writing to speed that up.
Yeah.
I don't think any of those costs change. No. The only way what you're talking about would say, oh, we go to Libra or somebody and say, just give us a BPM system, and they do all of that.
Well, maybe that off, but I'm also talking about, you know, I remember the very first month that I was here at the lab when I was working for Ralph. The first meeting I went to was a discussion of why we had 25 or 20 or 15 different BPM systems all around the lab. So, kind of what effort did, can we come up with a single hardware design from a digitizer point of view with a controller card to meet all of the instrumentation and possibly other needs?
I think that's
that's what you're talking about here. Yeah, that would be a big cost saving there, because it would limit the number of software to the limit platforms.
This we talked about this before. This might just be the way that's being accounted right now. Each little system is
that's correct
time to do the stuff, which is being essentially double counted. It really could be
right
used across
because we didn't have much of
that's
so. There's one other thing I want to mention, which I think might have been talked before, is that we're looking for running first beam in the front end of the Linac, the PIP2. In the beginning of 2025. Now, reality made by that's probably not going to happen, but that's the time scale we're also looking at, too. We're looking at basically 4 years from now, having a system ready to install. 4.5 years. So I think Nathan mentioned that we may get forced into something just from a time point of view. That's
not
a lot of time.
There's plenty
yeah.
of time to
I think
to
roll
this stuff. We just get busy.
For us,
well, if we get busy,
certainly enough time for the whole machine and the timing and everything else that has to go on. It's getting.
Yeah.
I think you get any architecture.
What you want to do there? We're getting late.
I think you get any architecture figured out, and then when it's ready to go, pick the hardware that fits the architecture instead of trying to fit an architecture to a hardware.
I think it's an iterative process where you slosh back, you wash back and forth over all of it, so that you know what's available, you know what to do, you know how you can build an architecture with the hardware.
I've seen a lot of systems
get your specs, decide how much of it you really need,
because they want to use ATCA and they're going to make everything fit into it no matter what the architecture. So it's better to lay out your architecture, find out what the best architecture is, and then see what solutions fit that best.
And I think it's important to your slide, it's good, John, but the architecture thing for DAQ, but you would also have to put in timing and if we need synchronous clocks across the systems, because that can be a big deal.
Tying
that stuff in. So those are
I think we'll be able to start making functional diagrams once we get some more information from MPS, and then once we get some more information from a new timing clock system, and then we'll start to form some functional diagrams, like you're saying, architecture. I think you're using the word architecture, but you know, it's a functional diagram where you don't specify part numbers inside the bubbles, you know, or even at first you don't specify the difference between micro TCA and PCIe, you don't specify that, right? So you specify the functions. In the slide that John was showing, we may even be doing things different than the way we do them in digitizers now, because there's some additional processing that goes on inside the digitizer for, say, a BPM system, I'm imagining. But in this new case, you would probably do minimal processing in the DAQ part, and then if there's an FPGA sitting behind the fiber, you know, more processing can go on there right as it stuffs it into the big memory. So, I mean, you can move these functions around, like the MPS.
Do you do the threshold decision down in the digitizer, or you do it up in the big MPS box? And so once we get to get real specifications, we'll be able to do functional type of analysis to decide where different functions end up going, which side of certain data links they end up on.
Be careful when you're talking about digitizers. They produce a lot of data. So, and it's better to keep this data close to.
You have to compute.
To PC, because it's a data cost, it's a huge amount. So just
right.
It's better.
That's bad, what's right there.
It's just one example. So 1 gig ADC have like 16 bits, right? So 16 bit.
250 megahertz is a lot of data. Well, there you go. That's good. That's good. That's a good thought. Good analysis.
So my point is, so basically, so you digitize signals, write the signals to memory, and then also maybe to reduce data rate, so do some processing, and only after that, so send data to
Yeah. So the high speed, the high speed link to the higher level, the high speed. So you take the sum of the high speed link, the time it takes to do that, and the time it takes for the processor to get memory across the PCIe, and that's got to be faster than BME bus, right? So everything's. So we're gonna do okay, I think. All right, what's it, 3:09 p.m.? So, did you have any more slides?
No, I'm done.
Okay, well, I think it's a whole week. It's definitely a whole week again till our next meeting. So, I will send out, I'll try to get more information posted and more information for people to look at. And John, can you send me your slides and I'll put them in the place where the rest of them are? And if you want to, you know, you have some thoughts, you wake up in the middle of the night, you can log on and go to the .db and see what somebody said, you know. All right, well, thanks.
Hey, I could do a presentation.
Yeah?
Plus, work
it's light.
It's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
it's a big queue system.
Okay.
It's got high-speed links. Just the stuff we're concerned about.
All right.
So it's an actual running model, and maybe it'll give a little more the nuts and bolts of what's, at least from our perspective, on what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. I'll put you down. Send me an email. Remind me.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll see, because I don't know when the, because the ones I really want to see are the MPS and the timing, but I don't know when they're coming.
Yeah.
So, I mean we may not be able to get.
An example of a front end that lives on its own. It doesn't have to have information from everybody, so it can just
go right into the network. Okay, so you and Kevin Martin have done similar things, it sounds like, right?
They're very similar.
But you're right, the architecture has got to drive us.
Yeah.
You know, we come
it turns out his design is very similar to what Kevin and Matt did.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
They tried to force
cycle
to
five
songs.
I
think Reflex.
Yeah, they were trying to force.
It would be nice if there were the common software that could run on them. But that's what we would do for this.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't Wind River have their own Linux kernel?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? They do. They do have a Linux product. I don't know how, you know.
I mean, is that something that they could parlay instead of us having the VxWorks license? They could give us the battle-hardened Linux kernel that could meet the needs?
Not if it's going to. Yeah.
We have to pay for it. And it's,
yeah.
I don't know. It's, yeah, they got it. They, you know, there's lots of different Linux kernels and distributions out there. You know, the thing that we always liked about ours was, you know, easily to customize it to whatever board we want to run it on. So.
You know,
to have to go to the manufacturer, get a board support.
So
that
can't miss a beat.
Well, the thing that's interesting,
right,
they list the board support
packages
that fit into
the
channel.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big list.
All the ME boards?
A pipeline.
There was a bunch of stuff on there.
Whatever, hour or filtering, such that you get a continuous output at some rate of hertz, same position or something.
Just get my email.
Opposed to right now, we're a trigger-based system, but.
Look at my inbox.
The MBS can't
yep,
wait.
There it is.
Example,
all right.
Thank you
for doing that.
No problem. There's nothing we'll screw us up. Yeah. But because of the fact the MBS wants stuff at the microsecond time scale level,
that's tough.
We need to either give them their own copy of the signal, let them do what they want, or we do something on our front, which can't wait for the full data set to get there like we do now, calculate a number, and then put it out there. It needs to be much faster than that. It needs to come out of it. As the data is being taken, you have to put results out. And that's not clear how we do that because these things need calibration correction and gains offsets. And,
And then, network bandwidth became an issue for us at CMTS. So one of the things I did was now, instead of just typing out all the information, I kind of select what I want to see, and then I parse it out there and scale it.
Well, we're definitely going to decimate for diagnostic purposes. That's a number that nobody has a good feel for. I think you guys are, Brian's saying he's going to do like a megahertz. He's going to put a waveform on it at a microsecond scale time scale.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That becomes
a
lot of
data. I mean, you do the math and you get a lot of, and then, of course, what's going to happen today? Who's going to, what's going to be useful? What's going to be looking at?
Burning heat in some server.
Right. But the other thing is the.
Yeah, that's cheap.
The modularity and the upgradability has to be, this thing has to be a flexible system because we haven't really defined it well.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something that, in 5 years when they start running this and they realize they want this, the system hopefully is flexible enough to give them that. Because right now, if you look at the specification for instrumentation, we give one number per pulse, which is kind of silly. So you've got a half a millisecond pulse at 20 hertz. With the BPM, we give a position, an intensity, and a phase for the average over the entire pulse. Well, we have so much more capability. In reality, at Loop2IT, we need to look inside the pulse to see all this field loading, the phase effects and stuff.
Yeah.
So we have that capability as a diagnostics, which you turn off if we want to have that all the time. So those numbers, that's something you're asking about requirements. We don't have good numbers for data rates. We have good numbers we want to measure, but not how much we pass it up. NPS, maybe we know actually a little bit more because for diagnostic, I bring this up with the accelerator physics guys. What do you want to know? How are we going to do this? They don't know because they haven't run it yet. Right? We'll see.
We'll find out.
Hopefully soon, 2025 is going to be before we know it.
Yeah. Well, I could give one example of one tiny part of the system.
If you got prices and how much the thing costs, that's something they're always looking for, It takes a lot of work to get all the prices, a whole full bill of material and then whole priced out thing. But if you've already designed it, maybe you've got a cost somewhere.
Yeah, we've got it all.
Yeah, okay.
All right. We should talk about the requirements. I think they actually even show something. The requirements for the measurements aren't what's driving this. The requirements for this stuff is like, okay, how fast do we, what do we have to do? And it's mostly, I don't think our front end is going to be a problem. I think we have to pick something, but, right now, with the systems we have now, pretty much they can all do the measurement. And a BME board with a digitizer and an FPGA, they can all do what we're going to do. The question is what algorithm we're going to run, but that has nothing to do with this discussion. And the second thing is how we're going to take this data and do something with it, which we don't have good guidance at the moment. I mean, if you look at I can give you the specifications for the requirement. It's silly. It's just bare bones basic. For every pulse, for a BPM, we'll give an average position, phase, and intensity. For every pulse, we will give an average beam current and beam intensity. For every pulse, we'll give an average, where the BLM is a little bit different. That's a little bit different. But we're just giving like one number for each pulse. Well, that's like 1980s.
Are those what you just told me? Is that part of what's in the BOE? Does the BOE
have
that?
It's in the level 3 FRS for instrumentation. Because they wanted it very basic. They wanted it very, almost no numbers. Other than the fact that, we give a data rate 20 hertz, we're going to give one number. But we know we're going to do more than that. That's what's so silly about this whole thing. That was more for the document's out there. We didn't want to be over. But in reality, we'll probably give out, like Brian's saying, we'll probably generate, I don't know, right now Nathan's software with this, like for example, the BPM, there's a down conversion pipeline. So you decimate down to, for example, the BPM right now at PIP2IT, the time I down convert all the data and do all the algorithm, it comes out at about 3 microseconds. Every 3 microseconds, you get a new data point. That's the average of that position. So, okay, then what we should do is take the 3 microseconds, you put that as a waveform, because it's not that big. We have only a half a millisecond pulse. Even if it's a millisecond at a microsecond, that's only 1,000 points. That's not. But if you multiply the number of channels, we have 525 BPM channels, something to do. So, more and more tying these numbers together, it starts getting to be a little bit bigger. So we haven't worked that out. We don't know. We can generate lots of stuff, and we can make requirements of you need these bandwidths. But then the other thing is that where's the data going to go? What are you going to do with it? Is it just going to go to NACNet and then just be thrown on the floor? I don't know. And yeah. I don't think anybody knows. I think people are thinking, but no one really knows what they want. So, and that would affect, that to me affects mostly, when I talk about architecture and stuff, I guess mostly like, all right, what are the data rates? Where's the data going? Who's going to do what? And it's also in bursts too, right? Things are happening not continuously. They're happening at 20 hertz. You get a burst. Everybody's got data right now. Okay, you take the rest of the next 30 milliseconds to read it out before the next pulse. You need it faster. I don't know. For MPS, it's got to be a continuous. We can't wait till for the entire pulse. We got to keep sending the data or analyzing the data as it comes in. And that was one of the things. See, that was one of the things that kind of screws up to IT. All the algorithms that Nate and everybody was doing was based on triggering, gathering all the data, and then calculating something. And you can't do that for the MPS. The MPS makes things. If we were doing MPS, this stuff would all be. We could pick pretty much anything we wanted to pick.
Yeah.
MPS, and I think the MPS, what John has shown and what Nathan and other people have talked about, there's probably gonna have to be some kind of private pipeline between us and MPS. This will be. Because I was even asking John, I say, with Ethernet, communication with the MPS. I don't know if Ethernet will work because Ethernet has some, there's some latency time for setup. There's the packets got to be, data's got to be packetsified and sent out in packets. And so there's a lag in there. And the question is that acceptable? Maybe we have to have something like you're saying. Maybe we just give them the analog signal or some kind of digital version of the analog signals. I don't know.
Well, once we get numbers of how many things go to MPS, how many things there are, how they're distributed along the length of the machine.
We're getting better. I think we're getting those.
We can come up with the most economical way to do things.
The primary instruments for MPS, I think we've identified. The secondary instruments are getting closer. For example, right now the BPM system has no input to MPS. Well, I'm not sure they'll keep it that way, but the MPS maybe they'll end up doing some kind of beam dynamics automated tuning or something, and MPS wants them. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the primary things are the beam current, and then the BLM system comes in at a secondary level. They don't come in as a primary term.
Are they still looking at BPMs as a tertiary level? Or
I don't know. That's where Arden has it in his head, and I think Elvin and Arden got to get on the same page, and they need to show it. And,
yeah.
This is where I would say, in some level, we have to have capability to do it. So that's what this stuff here, I just want to kind of say, it has to be upgradable. And flexible enough that we can come along and say all of a sudden in 3 years Arden says, well, we want all the BPM systems now on MPS. Okay, like you said, we have multiple channels there. Okay, we have a channel from the BPM card. We weren't using it for anything. We'll send the data to you. We'll give you the data. Because I don't think we're gonna know 100% sure in the next couple of years. And even if we do know, I bet some systems are gonna change.
Yeah.
Not all of them, maybe, but some.
I mean, you're going to find things out,
We already have a 52AP. Every time they ran out there, they found something that was different.
They found out something else.
They wanted, and Tasha wanted to do this. That's how the MPS system out there got so screwed up, is because they kept on wanting these requirements. And I know the architecture, I said the same thing, but the architecture wasn't set up to do what they wanted to do. Don't forget, these FPGA cards are not like programming, on your PC in C or something, or Python. The FPGA code is a pain in the ass to do certain things.
I've written.
You've written it. I mean, I haven't done it for a long time. It's either, I don't know if we're doing floating point or fixed point, but it's much more rudimentary.
Yeah, basis. You don't have, you can't say X equals Y as easily.
Now you can dump cores in and stuff. You can do things where you, like this is what John and I was talking, but this is outside of my area of expertise. All I know is that.
There was a guy yesterday, they had another machine learning thing, powwow.
You've been going to those?
I went to this one. I went to a couple.
Who's running this?
Bill Pellico.
I should find out about that because I used to do a little bit of that.
Yeah,
but I did it for machine vision. So it was machine learning, but it was vision algorithms.
Oh, okay.
Because I worked, before I came here, I worked for a machine vision image company. Process. So we were developing, you know, automated techniques for...
This guy that talked yesterday, he was doing LHC trigger levels, you know.
Right, so that would be a good place to look.
And like detect, you know, detector, trigger decisions. And they were bringing in, what'd he say? He said something like 1,000 gigabytes of data to the level one trigger, you know, through this huge system of FPGAs, you know how it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was just huge. So he was explaining, you know, neural networks and doing the basics. And I'm like, yeah, okay. He needs a lot of FPGAs. But his big thing was that the way they do it, they do it with FPGAs, and they use HLS, which is high-level synthesis. High-level synthesis, as I understand it, is writing things in C with special Pragma things in your compiler that are based on the chip you're going to end up developing that RTL code for the FPGA from the C code. And then they can turn around different things, different codes, quicker that way, and it they can easily, and since the you know, these neural network things are pretty basic multiply accumulate type things, you know,
right.
It synthesizes well.
The big advantage of they did neural networks when I was a grad student on CDF back in the '80s. They started doing it for the trigger system. The thing that's the advantage now is you've got so much more processing power. The algorithms really aren't any different than they were 30 years ago. They're just, you've got, the other thing that was a big thing was GPUs, the GPU processors, where you have lots of, it's kind of like parallel processing those, because for video, which where it started, but now it's being used for cryptocurrency mining and machine learning. Machine learning.
It's a big process.
That's what took off was the GPU processor all of a sudden you got all this processing power, so now you can make these neural networks much more complicated. You make a multi-layer, and training can go much faster. I mean, a lot of this is how long it takes to train. Some of these things, my friend did this stuff where he was doing financial planning. He tried to do this stuff. You know, back in the 90s, they would do the training. It would take literally, if they made it complicated enough, it would take months. Now they could do it train something in a day. And so, anyway.
I kind of like the idea of this PCIe bus, because you can get, I don't know, 4 slots or more, and then you have a big PC board that you stick in the middle. And if we defined on all of our data collect measurement devices a high-speed link, they could bring that high-speed link into here. They could stick a GPU over in this slot, you know.
Yeah.
And you could stick a DAC type of, or an A to D DAC type, if you need just a simple output, if you're going to drive something based on all these things that you're bringing in. And it's mix and match if you've got the extra ports on the measurement units.
Right. So that's the other thing, is you can come along in a bus structure, and what we do VME, the VMEs, we do custom board, but we buy everything else, right? We can mix and match stuff, but depends what people make for VME. Yeah, I think was that Edward saying it? I don't think computing is gonna be, or maybe Nathan was, I don't think processing is gonna be our issue. I think we'll have more than enough processing, at least on the front end. I don't think that's gonna be, I think the issue is gonna be just bandwidth and network connection. How are we going to move stuff around? You know, because right now we're not running. I don't think we're running in any kind of processing with our boards right now. I think they're more than capable enough. And the PIP2 accelerator is not very taxing in terms of data and data load. It's not going to be that. You know, it's not that high a rate. It's a half a millisecond pulse.
Not until,
you know, most
becomes,
of our stuff
not until
is
it becomes CW, but that's 20 years
and
away.
In that case, that this is where we were thinking earlier. This is where this, you know, a couple years ago was getting to be a mess, because I realized CW, we can't do our trigger based processing. We have to come up with some kind of, and this is where Nathan and I talked, and basically the idea, well, we could, like, a digital radio first in, you know, goes through some pipeline, filtering and processing code, and first in, you know, first out type thing. It does whatever decimation, but it just continuously takes data in, continuously takes data out. And you might have some trigger reset event there, but it's not a trigger-based system. It's just always constantly running. And I think, I don't know if we ever did anything like that here or not. Nathan, we were talking about it, and that's where we're heading. But that's not the way it's going to be now. Now everything's going to be like a pulse-based machine, so it's not going to be more complicated. And it wouldn't be, I think all this stuff would be fairly easy for us, at least instrumentation, if it wasn't for the NPS part. Now, controls, I missed the control modernization because meeting this week, came down, and I saw the email, but it wasn't in my calendar. I looked at my calendar that morning, and I don't have anything, so I just totally missed it.
Yeah.
So I told Jim didn't put them on the calendar, he just had emails, so I'll make the next one. And then in 2 weeks, like I said, and I'm gone at ESS for that week to talk to them about instrumentation and IVIC and stuff. So if you can only have one meeting that week, we can maybe only miss one meeting. But so the 15th is
groundbreaking.
And then the 12th is an all, so there's an all hands meeting on the 12th, right?
Yeah.
Which I think that too. So I'll miss that. And then Rozier's going away is on Wednesday. Miss that one too.
Oh, you're going to ESS.
I'm going to ESS. I fly out, so that's the Sunday, and I fly back that Friday.
Yeah, man.
I got to get them an email.
Well, you're doing important stuff out there.
Well, we'll see. I mean, a lot of it's a lot of, it's a lot of like, what's the line from Shakespeare? A lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. You know, we make a lot of noise, but the progress is always slow, right? It's never, and I like that you're driving this thing here now, because we had this false starts for 2 years now. We've had these get together, and I think everybody now is starting to realize, also, we're getting closer to 52. Everybody's like, okay, we got to decide some controls modernization, controls here, Brian's here, Nathan's here. So the people are all getting together, so I think this is really great. I think we'll solve this, and I think the 52 cost will drop. So that was the big thing, is right now we have a lot of costs. Nathan pointed out, we just basically, you know, everybody did their own evaluation, assuming there was nobody else. In reality, that's not what we're doing.
You know, Mike Lingren really put on a show for me today. I had my department meeting, and he just came out with, Craig, you're the guy that everybody's gonna, you know, hang. When you can't bring in the projects the way they baseline them for PIP2, you got to make sure that.
Then you better check all our numbers, because
I got to check all those numbers. Well, I got to make sure that, you know, that we're not shorting ourselves, you know. And
well, we probably are in some ways, because they beat us down, right? I mean, we go in there, we come up with numbers. See, Nathan, I came up. I told you I did my BPM estimate, and I got $2 million in M&S, and Nathan did it, and it came out $900 million, or 900,000. So it's like, well, that's over a factor of two difference. My guess is it's somewhere in the middle. But, yeah, I tried that. Manfred always made me bump I come up with numbers, and he was always telling me to bump them up. But now the projects are pushing back.
Man, we bump them up so they can push them back.
Yeah. So
we don't want to not bump them up, but then have them push them back.
You said something at the beginning that I was going to ask you.
This meeting?
Yeah, at the beginning of this meeting about the responsibility for, I forget what it was. You said somebody told me this morning, and then I said, okay, who told you that? That's kind of clear, but I can't remember what it was now. You said it had something to do with the project.
Somebody's responsibility? Oh, I don't know. Somebody.
You said that you're responsible for doing something for the PIP2 project, and I was like, what? Who told you that?
Maybe I said that this is not for the PIP2 project, or.
No, it was. But you talked to Mike this morning. Maybe it was something Mike said.
It might have been. I might have brought something out of that.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
Yeah.
So we should talk about at least the requirements and what information you could use here. I can. And some of these.
I remember. I was going to, if we got down to the end, I was going to try to start to outline all the sources of requirements. You know.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the MPS.
Right.
You know, that's gonna give us requirements in our space.
Is our space the physics
measurements?
Yeah.
You know.
Is our space the diagnostic space or
this is what we are digitizing, our instrumentation.
But instrumentation, not necessarily controls,
you know,
or low RF.
Define rates, signal to noise, resolutions, accuracies.
We have dynamic
range.
Right. So we have
and
a lot of that
in
various locations.
The control system, you know, yeah. They're going to come in and say, you know, your front ends have to provide this client server based stuff, and then there's the timing system. You know, it's going to do this, but it's probably going to do this too, right?
So we should. Some of this is documented. Some of this is, you know. I think we drive some of this also in terms of what we need. most of the timing is not going to be very critical because our bandwidths are slow, right? I mean, all the instruments, the BPM has to buy, well, the BPM and then the, that we do is Walker and monitors. But everything is
smeared out. They're talking about time stamping stuff.
Time stamping is, that's different. That's important. That's important. But in terms of our data rates coming out, I mean,
as we digitize it, I think maybe there's a clock number, or maybe like a reset event. And
so
then,
this is where
and then we count clocks, and every bit of data, maybe it gets a count associated with it.
This comes down to what do we need requirements? Because don't forget, every one of our systems, from a bandwidth point of view, is not bunch level. It's much slower than a bunch level. The BPM rings, so it's resolution. Even if you just look at the analog signal, is on the order of tens of 50, 60, 70 nanoseconds. The toroids, their bandwidth they can't go better than a megahertz. So you're at the microsecond.
So each pulse, we're only going to measure one position.
That's the minimal measurement. So we had to define a minimal set of measurements. So I can show you the spec where we wrote it up in the level 3. If they wanted something very high level and very, not vague, but very general. And so at the moment, we have BPM systems that measure beam position, phase, and intensity, average beam intensity phase for every pulse. So at 20 hertz, we're going to put out, three or four numbers, minimal. Now, in reality, we're going to do much more than that. Then it also has this line in there that said, for beam current measurements, we're going to put out the average beam current and beam intensity per pulse, and we're also going to give information to the MPS system, but it doesn't get specific as to how that's done. So right now, the requirements are kind of at a high level. They're a little bit vague. Now, some things are a little more well-defined from previous measurements, but if you look at the more recent FRSs and everything, they're not very, and we probably have to write more. We have to write more of this stuff down and come up with it. But, for example, timing, Brian keeps on talking about, we need bunch level resolution. I'm thinking, well, why? We're going to have systems that are, there's nothing we can measure at the bunch level because all of our instruments are filtering and converting down. The only thing that could do that could be potentially the wall current monitor, but that's going to go through a scope. Because we don't have, unless we get something that can measure, 5 gigahertz digitizing card, we're going to probably do that through a scope, and we're only going to sample that once in a while.
Scopes are handy.
Yeah, and it's going to be
single point.
Right.
And that'll do a lot of things with a scope.
And that'll make a measurement as requested. So in other words, it'll measure one beam pulse. It won't measure 20 hertz. It'll measure a fraction of a hertz because a scope, by the time you digitize it and read it, and you want to read it out, it's seconds usually, right? So the primary stuff is fairly slow. Everything we have, the BLM system, Ray talks about these, the integration times are on the order of tens or 20s or 40 microseconds. They have integration windows. They're fairly long. Now, we can make them faster, but, the ionization chambers are slow. PMTs are fast, so there's a couple of things. The PMT might be fast enough to do something that if we want to get that to FPS, but...
Yeah. You were saying that the BLM still has different time scales.
Data, yes.
With different time
scales. So it depends on the detector,
associated,
right?
With each detector.
We're basically dominated by
slow
our
slow losses or fast... Fast high losses,
probably,
or slow low,
right?
Losses.
So that's also hasn't been well defined. We're going so hard by pushing to get the money for the project, we haven't actually designed the project.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find some time to look at the BOEs and see how much time we gave ourselves for designing things and testing things.
Yeah, so those are kind of coming
out. Sure,
if you look in, if you look in the, if you look in. Maybe Brian Brendel get together for a few minutes because he could probably know exactly where the best place is to look. We're seeing the
found
stuff
a PIP2.db that had all our
BOEs, the moment.
Or that you gave a link in your talk. Your talk had a link to .db,
right.
and that was another link to all the BOEs.
So you can go and look at the BOEs. The BOEs themselves, the Word document doesn't have money. So the Excel documents does. So you'd have to say, so in the BOE, there's two types of documents. There's a Word document, which is very fluffy thing, like, oh, this is how we're basing our estimates. We're basing it off experience.
Yeah, basic.
And some assumptions, like, hey, we're going to, this is for measure, this BOE for BPM assumes that there's 125 BPMs in the, so it gives numbers like that, but the costs are going to be on the Excel sheet. So there'll be, for each Word document, there'll be a corresponding Excel sheet. Now, I think we only have a couple of those up right now. I still have, I'm still working on the PIP2IT
one. Is the data listed in man hours or in money? Or both?
I don't know how they list it. I know we gave them, I know we generated things. And so we also have our Excel sheets that Brian and I generated, which you can look at those and at least tell, we can tell you what we presented. And that was in man hours and M&S dollars. So man hours we didn't. But that's actually very readable too. You look at that and it says, okay, and it's because it talks about activity, you know, what kind of person, how many hours. If it's an activity, it needs a couple of different kind of people, maybe an accelerator physicist, engineer, mechanical engineer, technician, we try to list all those, how many hours. And you can look at that and get at least an idea of estimating. And this is all based on me going talking to people, talking to Nathan, talking to Randy, talking to Aisha, talking to Bogey, you know, getting all the numbers from our past experience, and that's how we put those in there.
Yeah, so this is all the initial numbers, all the initial schedule.
Right.
Yeah, so it stretches spending of money and spending of time out through the years. Spends it out.
It doesn't make the like a Gantt chart type thing. And that's being done by, so we give this document to the project people and they're sticking it in.
So you just have hours and duration.
Yeah, and they're putting it together.
With some concept of successors and predecessors.
I'll just show this thing real quick recorded because
I've been sitting here waiting for this thing to, I guess this thing recorded my meeting, so I'm like, okay, I got to save it. Please select a folder. Where would you like to file these?
You do an audio recording?
Zoom will record your meeting for you.
Just let me know that. I should do that next time.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, we'll give that a go. Say okay.
Yeah, if I can get there. Close the wireless. When I close the lid and open it, the wireless doesn't.
No, it doesn't kick
back. Not finding it.
Looks like it says it's got bars.
Yeah, it says it's connected, but sometimes.
It's got a little exclamation point.
See, it's spinning.
Yeah, you got a little exclamation point. Does that mean it's got a problem?
Nope, there it is. I don't.
Security.
Unsecure.
Oh, it, you're just unsecure.
Yeah. So
we're all a little insecure.
So I think I pointed you to this. So on the so we got a common drive out there. I'm being server one. There's some called srf-proton.bd. This is kind of a hard drive that's used for the SRF Proton people. And under that, there's a common area with my name. I could send you this link.
I'll probably have to get somebody to give me permission to.
You do, and that's really easy. You just put a help desk ticket in to say
help
I
desk ticket.
Yeah, and you say I need access to. And then so under there, there's a common area, and then my name, and under that, we stuck an area called PIP2 Project Management, and then we have CD2, and then so under CD2, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here. This is where I showed you the sheet that we made this one initially, so the last time we modified it was December, but we started making it like, you know, middle of last year. And this has quantities. This is where if I but there'll be there'll be a tab for different things. Here's the BPM system. If you tab on that, it says location, pickups, channels, and this is useful. Then we have some. Now these numbers are changing. These might be old numbers, but this is what we started with, and then you can go under profile monitors, and it talks about. So you can get quantities out of here. I have some ideas. So this is other people. The best thing to look at is there's these individual folders underneath. And these are the individual subs. So instrumentation is level 4, and then level 5 is actual the instrument. So like for BPM here, this one's kind of done. If you look under BPM there, what did he do here? What is he? This is the first time I've seen this. So Brian apparently rearranged everything. But Excel, so this is so screwy. So we generate an Excel sheet we filled out, so I think it's in here. If we look in there, because we didn't know how to start this thing, so. Mm. So what's the last one? That's 2 here. That's the, it says version. This isn't quite the same thing. This is one of Brian's little things. But here, we talk about the hierarchy of the what they're doing. So warm pickup procurement, warm prep procurement, you know, components. So here, prepare rec. They did the procurement very detailed. Prepare rec, support procurement, interact with vendor, QA inspection. So here we put down duration, and if you go to the right, there's things like people's time. I'm trying to make sure that the way Brian's got this set up in terms of. So labor resource, how well we know it, conceptual, which is basically we know it, the 40 to 60% estimate. And even here, like for example, this is hard to read, but this receive materials for pickup. So this is like the procurement, and this is the time, and then here, this is M&S. So $378,000 has been estimated for the pickups. And then I can go back and tell you how we got that number by these documents. So we put a sheet like this together, and you go down through, and then the sort of warm pickups, then we have this is the thing here, electronics, digital processor. So basically this is a, you know, FPGA board type system. So we have the same thing, request, we're gonna, even if we buy it from a vendor, we're gonna write a quote.
So you've got a prototype stage here.
Yeah, this is a prototype. Okay, we have a prototype stage, and we allocated only $4,000. So basically we're either gonna build something for $4,000 or buy something for $4,000. And then the labor in terms of, now we gotta be careful because this part here is just the procurement labor. And then if you go down here,
Electronics. Is there things in there for crates and processors too?
So usually I lumped it all. It's all lumped in there.
Yeah, if we're designing a separate box.
So this is where I got the numbers from Nathan. That's why it's just hard. It's in there, but it's hard sometimes to figure out. So, like, for example, in this one here for BPM, if you go under BPM, if you go under MS Word, where's the support documents, reference documents? So in here, if you look at a lot of this, this is, let's open one of these guys up. This is like a purchase order for, so that's how we base our costs. We basically have an old purchase order. This is what they want. They're old. We're changing some modifications, but then in here there's going to be an Excel. So this is what Nathan gave us. So I can't do all this stuff. So I have to go to the people that know. So Nathan does the BPMs. Aisha does the beam current. Randy does the BLMs, and I'm doing the profiles. But see, this is what Nathan did.
Okay.
This is LBNF though. So he said, "This is LBNF. This is what I did for people at BPM pickup cables." Hardware, so you hear they have crates. Specify an order DCC crates, you know, and then there's costs in here for the crates, 3 crates, $25,000. I think that's a little bit low myself. But then, you know, so here we took our numbers and scaled them for PIP2. So for the number of channels, which is where that first sheet I showed you had so many channels, I took that number, I take the cost he has, the people I either copy for development, but for actual, if it turns out it's labor to actually do something with so many BPMs, and I scaled it correctly. So I take, this is the basic set of numbers that we took, and then we generated another Excel sheet, and this was our cost estimate, which I forget. So this is just the same kind of thing. But now what happens is, so there's that $378,000 we saw on the previous sheet came from here. So this was, and you can look on it right in the comments. It says $650 for a housing. Pickups were $650 a piece times mm-hmm. four. Housing is roughly $1,600. I'm a little confused of what my comments there.
Housing
from Mebit.
Some range of price, range of costs.
No, that was supposed to be like a comma type thing. I'd have to go back and look at the details. That's why it's hard to go back and look at this, like even a week later, because like, okay, how do we do this again? While you're doing it, it makes sense, and then we try to put as many comments in there. So what I have to do is, let me take a look what this says. So here it was, $650 times 4, so that's the button cost. $1,600 is the housing cost, right? So it's 4 buttons plus 1 housing, mm-hmm. and there's a quantity, there's 90 of these. I think I somewhere in here I say they build 90. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, place bid for 90
people. Yeah, and I think it was we needed 84, 85, and then like 5 spares. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this, so if you want to know numbers, this is how we did it.
Yeah.
This is how we did it. And then you have to kind of figure out, so Nathan adds upward for some reason.
So the total BPM cost, see, for the total, for everything, 90 dual plane button. No, that's not true. It's not. I miscopied. It's not dual plane. I changed the number, but it's four button BPM. Mm-hmm. Electronics and software is $800,000. When I did it my first time, I got $2 million.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me nervous. You know. So Nathan, oh, it doesn't cost that much. It costs that much. It's always going to cost more than you think, and you're always going to forget something. So if you go through this, there's electronic hardware, there's software, and software.
So at some point, are you going to? Is there another decision before it becomes the number in the basement?
We can make modifications now, but soon we won't be able to.
Okay.
So if you want to look at some of these, and, I mean, the best person to do is if you have questions, is to get me. But Nathan's the main person.
Uh-huh.
So you might, and I would say what you do is you base it off of some of the stuff we have on the right here. Here, like for example, this is. I assume those are going to be. So this came up as you're talking, right? Are we going to have a crate, or we're going to have pizza things? So okay, well, if you're going to have crate, how many of these crates are you going to have? So we basically said, well, six. We'll put roughly five plus one, you know, locations down the Linac. Okay, that tells us how many timing boards. Because if you have want to put 10 locations, then we need 10 timing boards. If it's three locations,
sort of thing.
So we made a best guess, you know, from the number of channels here, and then
Are they allocating rack space for crates?
They're not quite at that level yet. They're trying to figure out how they're going to fit all the. They are aware of what we need. I did give a requirement of how many crates. That's somewhere else in here. That's in this on this. So that folder that's where it's a CD2 and all this stuff. There's all kind of junk in there. So this is a place that we decided to, okay, I want it on my hard drive because nobody else can get to it. Mm-hmm. So it's on the network. Everybody can get to it. Everybody can look at it. The bad thing is like as was pointed out by Brian Chase, then everybody can get their hands in it and get their fingers in it and screw it all up. So Brian has been the one though. He's the cam, so he's the person that's supposed to be. And we even have installation here. Now some of this stuff was, for example, commissioning installation. When I put out of scope, that means it's covered by somebody else's cost. So for example, Fernanda, I gave her a list of, is that even in here? Let's go up to the CD2. So on the top level, there's a bunch of stuff, but there's LBNF cost, beam instrument, so Hebbit cost to Fernanda, cable list, we did some of this stuff. Now this is mostly at the beginning of this year, but we did cable list. Somewhere in here, I think we did commissioning. So I'd have to go. I mean, we're doing things. Everything so fast that it's sometimes it's hard to remember where we got the numbers were.
Yeah. You got good notes, I guess.
We're trying to.
You just kind of drag through it all again and see what it says.
All right, so I don't even know what half this stuff is. I must have to go back and look at it. Oh, these are. This was the question of where we were on certain. So some of the stuff is occurring, you know, we're so these are active. That's everything. Is they do things in terms of activity numbers. I have no idea what these numbers are.
Where do you go find them?
Well, we're not allowed to get into P6. So Brian has access because he's the cam, but I'm not, so I have to go to Brian and say, what's this number? And so anyways, that's Craig, that's where we are.
Yeah, there's the data. Well, I can get some time and I can get
we'll take a look, but you know it's going to be.
Then I'll interface with the individual folks and ask them, you know, about this,
so
about
the,
that. What
the
do
big
think?
Player is maybe undoubtedly the BPM more. System, just from the number of channels. It's going to be that's going to be our big player. The next one in terms of channel quantity, I mean that's how I scale at least. So the big one from electronic point of view is the BPM and BLM. The big one from necessarily a cost point of view, but it's not really based on any kind of electronics, is probably the laser wire. But that's based on laser components and optical components, which I've, you know, it's not this stuff. We're not going to have that many channels. We're going to have maybe, you know, 20 channels. There's not that many signal channels. Mm. It's mostly, you know, mirrors have got to be adjusted and moved, lasers got to be transported, safety systems, enclosures. It's mostly mechanical work and optics for that one. The data acquisition shouldn't be that bad.
How many bits can? I mean, have you found the cost of all the laser bits, mirrors, and?
Well, that's what I'm working on now. So we have a preliminary estimate, right? But we don't have a design yet. So I'm getting better. That's what I want to work on next.
Try to get to a full bill of material and.
Well, we're not going to have, for the laser one, we will not have a full bill of material because we don't have a design yet. Yeah. But we will give our prototype. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to base it off the prototype PIP2IT system. And we have much more complete set of numbers there. And I'll just say this is a prototype, you know, with scale. If the worry is that whenever they do a review, one of these or multiple of these systems are going to be, they call the drill down, I guess. They're going to go through and they're going to ask you, all right, defend each one of these numbers. And I think for BPM, we're pretty, you know, for most systems, we're in pretty good shape, but not for the laser wire. And that'll just be something that Paul says, don't we know? You know, for CD2, we do not have to have all our designs finished. We have to have like the 60% level. We have to be at a percent level that they believe that we understand our costs. So, okay.
Yeah.
What's the next thing on my list?
You got another meeting today?
No more.
Friday. That's good. It's Friday.
It's already like, what is it, almost 4?
Yeah, it's past 4. It's 4, yeah. Yes, it's 4.
Maybe I'll go tomorrow. I need to get a new iPad. My iPad died.
Oh.
I know, it's kind of sad. It's only 4 years old. Well, like it died. What the
heck? Died? It just won't start up?
It's black. You know, nothing. Hit the button, plug it in, hit the, nothing. It's just black screen.
I got in those modes on, I have an iPad. It's working again, but at one point it did that. And I just held the little circle button,
yeah.
What you call it, and the on off button. I just held them for like better than 2 minutes. And then it popped up.
Really? I'll try that. I would never believe it. I am too, because this thing was desperate.
I was trying everything. My wife's old iPad.
I'm trying to keep it alive because we never really back. I mean, I back it up myself, like photos and stuff. But we don't have it on the cloud or anything.
I would try that. I would hold the little buttons down for. Together
and it came alive, huh?
Because that's how you're supposed to reboot the thing, is to hold those buttons down.
I didn't know that.
I had to hold them down for a long, long time before it kicked in.
First, it's been unplugged for probably a month.
Well, you get it plugged in.
Well, I was gonna go buy another one, and then
you can't tell if it's charging. You know?
No, you don't see anything. It's black screen.
Plug it in.
Leave it that way for 20 minutes or something like that, then try it.
Or maybe you have, yeah.
Or I could plug it in and just try to do it while it's plugged in.
Yeah, just hold the buttons down for longer than you'd ever
think
you'd need to.
Leave it out here. Oh, that's what's called. Mm-hmm. There was cake in here before the meeting.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, though.
Sorry, I got to look at this one, too, I guess.
Okay, have a good weekend.